And our speaker tonight is Nick. All right, Nick.
Hi, my name's Nick. Wow, do I love Al-Anon, let me tell you. To see a bunch of men who I come in and they're all so welcoming is amazing. I'm not a regular at this meeting. Most of you don't even know who I am. I hope you all do now, but most of you did not. You all know a piece of me by the time I leave. And that's a great gift of this program, is that we all get a piece of each other, so we all feel welcome. I didn't feel welcome for a long time in Al-Anon. I had that perspective. They say, God, what's it, take what you like and leave the rest. You know, look for the similarities, not the differences. And all I saw were the differences. You know, I came from a background where most of my history is full of gangs, drugs, fighting. You know, it's full of rage, full of my own behavior. You know, my problem is not somebody else's drinking. You know, my problem is my reaction to life. You know, that's my problem. My problem is not somebody else's drinking. I grew up in a family affected by alcoholism. I was born under the influence, you know, and that affected my life in a way that I never understood until like 20 years later, 22 years later, until I knew. My dad, he was a businessman. He did men's hair placement on one side of the office, and he dealt drugs out the other side. You know, so you know, we lived in Venice, and we had armed guards sitting out the front. You know, that's a good place. That's a pretty good haircut, right? That's what my dad did. That's like he did men's hair, and that was kind of how I started. I remember going to sleep at night with beer bottles and, you know, rage out my window, fighting cop cars in Venice. And you know, that's what I slept to at night. So as I got older, I loved the city. I still do. You know, I love going out at night. I love Hollywood. I love LA. I love to go out and have fun. I'm not a boring guy. I freak out people on cruises, and I do it sober. You know, I'm not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I made the decision not to drink or use at all. Because I knew that coming from where I came from, you know, I have alcoholics come up and tell me, and who we have intimate meetings, and they go, "Thank God you don't drink, Nick. The world's a safer place." You know, I'm like, all right, I get it. I know. Because when I came in, I was like, most my inventory was all sober. You know, I listened to alcoholics share. They say go to open AA meetings, and I did. And I go, okay, I got it. Did that. He, she, it, whatever. I did it sober. What the hell? You know, I came to Al-Anon, and all I heard, and not that it's true, but all I would listen for was how everybody had a problem with their wife or husband's drinking. And I didn't have a husband or wife who drank. You know, I was 13 when I came to Alateen. When I was 4, my parents broke up. And my mom went to rehab, and my dad got out the drug game. And I remember I went to preschool. And I had a great picker from the very beginning, I'm telling you. One of my preschool teachers hooked up with my dad. And I remember introducing them. This is the way I remember it. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's what I remember. And I remember they got together, they hooked up. And my dad would go on business trips a lot. He was flying around the country. And when he was gone, there was some severe abuse. Physical abuse, weapons, punches, kicks, all kinds of things. And I never told him. You know, the fear that we can get in this disease of people, places, and things can really control our lives. You know, it's really messed up my life for a long time. My fear really ran my life for a long time. And that was a real fear when I was growing up. That was a legitimate fear. When that would happen and my dad was away, I didn't have anybody to go to. I had nothing to do. You know, but to not cry, hold it in, and keep going. You know, and then all my friends, for some reason, all had the same background. You know, all my friends in like 4th, 5th grade, all of them were abused too. And my first little, you know, my first girlfriend relationship is still out using. You know, we met in 3rd or 4th grade. We shared war wounds together, you know, and she's still out there. And it's a sad thing to me. You know, she's a beautiful girl. And so that's my life. That's a part of my beginnings. I didn't know what to do for a long time. Sometimes I still don't, by the way. I'm not up here like I know something, I promise. I'm only up here because I'm desperate for my recovery. That's it. I love Al-Anon. Our speaker wasn't, you know, there's another speaker who's going to be here. And I was like, I'll do it because I'm also impulsive. You know, and, you know, impulsive, compulsive, you know, I always thought of myself as repulsive, but not anymore. You know, and so when I was 11, they broke up, and I still didn't tell my dad about the abuse. And the only thing about that is that, you know, you may go, oh, did he qualify for Al-Anon? Who's his qualifier? Whatever. She was an untreated Al-Anon. She wasn't an alcoholic. Her parents were alcoholics. They were abusive. She was abusive. You know, I don't sit here and believe that alcoholics do all the dirt. You know, as an Al-Anon, like I said, my four step was full of my dirt, not theirs. You know, I grew up, I had a lot of ideas. You know, I needed you to make me feel better. I can't do it. You know, I need Al-Anon, I need God to help me feel better. My perspective of my higher power. But for a long time, it's always been, I need he, she, it, whatever, that approval to make me feel better. Because I didn't know where to get it growing up. I had no clue. No clue. My dad was away. And it's funny, I thought my dad was the person I was closest to my whole life. It's kind of sad. You know, he died when I was 16. And I'll get back to that later. But when I was about 11 or 12, my dad took me out to the desert to see my cousins. And I remember my first Al-Anon moment, my first known Al-Anon moment, was when my dad gave me $40. And this is on Thanksgiving. And my cousins out in the desert, they're like, I know what to do with that, right? So as an Al-Anon, I'm like, all right, here, like me, here, take my money, right? Next thing I know, we're all getting high, right? They smoke weed out there. I'm out there with them, and I didn't know what I was doing. And I remember the only difference between me and alcoholic is that I don't have that obsession over alcohol or drugs. Alcohol doesn't do anything for me. It just gets me loopy. You know, it gets me talkative, which I'm talkative already. So, you know, it's me, but a little brighter. And that's it. And so, you know, I remember I was like 15 years old, and all my friends were all like gangbangers. And I was the only white kid in that group. I moved a lot. I moved from Brentwood to Venice, to Inglewood, to the Palisades, all right? From the Palisades to, where was it next? Santa Monica. Santa Monica to Agora. Agora to Reseda, back to Reseda. And Reseda, Woodland Hills. I lived all over. And I remember all my friends were breakdancers into hip-hop, and culturally, that's where I am. I still listen to hip-hop. I still love to dance. Sometimes I breakdance. Don't break an arm, but sometimes I break dance. I moved out to a place called Agora. Anybody know where Agora is? Okay. I moved out there before there were really white rappers who were cool. And so they all thought I was a wannabe gangster when all I was a scared kid who had a lot of friends who were gangsters. And they all knew who I was. You know, they were like, oh, that's Nick. He's cool. I just happened to be that one white kid. I wasn't like them. I was just Nick. And I was fearful and I was afraid because when I was 12 years old, my dad got in this car accident and there was nobody to take care of me except for my mom, who I still just was getting to know. She was only got sober recently, like when I was like 10 or 11. And when my dad got in this car accident, shattered his face, broke every bone in his back. You know, my mom took care of him as a service, new in sobriety. And that's when I got to know her. But that's when my rage came out. That's when my real rage came out. And that's when I would say part of my disease is putting holes in walls and breaking windshields. You know, if anybody else knows that, welcome to Al-Anon. You know, because, you know, that was my disease and I did that sober. That scared me. I remember when that would happen, it was like a blinding rage. I didn't know what to do. And I was 13 years old and my dad's still in a wheelchair and, my mom, she took me to an Alateen meeting. Now, at this time, she took me to an Alateen meeting in Westlake. And like I said, all my friends were likes. You know, we were all the same way. Funny enough, most of those kids I'd partied with on the weekends. You know, and so I'm going to this Alateen meeting. I show up, and I'm sitting there. And I'm, like, about the size I am now. And this is a girl that's much bigger than me. scarier than me. And I was sitting in the meeting, and you ever hear a newcomer kind of like this, like handshaking, barely up? And I wanted to talk because I had so much inside of me. You know, I never talked about the abuse. I barely talked about the rage, and I didn't know what to do with myself. And I had my hand barely raised, and she just took it and went like this. And I never stopped talking since. It was on. You know, Alateen was the only place I was actually able to share about that abuse. Because it's funny, when you're in that manipulative, cunning, baffling dynamic of alcoholism, you learn some things. You know how to lie real well. Cheat, steal, manipulate. I knew how to do that with the best. I never told the courts what happened with her. I knew what a court-mandated reporter was by the age of 8. So I knew how to manage the system, tell them what to tell them, what not to tell them, how to lie. I just, the whole time. And Alateen was the first place I went where I didn't lie. It was the first place where I went and was honest with them about who I was. And I could only do it because I knew I was safe. No other reason. You know, I had no other choice. So about 13 to 15 or 16 are the best years of my life. And what does that consist of? Well, all my friends were outsiders, fresh out of Compton, fresh out of juvie, fresh out of gangs. You know, that's who I hung out with. So we were like, you know, that book, The Outsiders in school? That was us. We got in more fights. We got in more stuff than I knew what to do with. I got, you know, hit in the head with mag lights. I hit people, you know, whatever. I almost got killed, almost killed people. And I had no regard for my life at all. And I remember that those are the best years of my life up to a teenager. Those are the best years of your life. Something's not right. You know, it was like, those are what I knew. That's what I knew as friends. You know, those are my road dogs. We rolled together, you know, and I, what do I know? So I'm still in Alateen, crazy. And I didn't see my dad very often. Me and my dad weren't that close, as you might imagine. I thought he was the person I was closest to my whole life, but I was getting abused under his watch. And so I remember we were, me and my dad, one night they had Taco Tuesday. And what it was Taco Tuesday. And we went to play, I went to his house, and we played ping pong, and we ate tacos, and we watched the birds fly. And one thing I did learn in Alateen was to take a little direction, some suggestion, you know, something other than what I was doing. And I learned about love, and I learned about God, and I heard about the steps somewhere. And I remember when I left, somebody said, Nick, hug your dad and tell him you love him. We didn't do that often. That wasn't our thing, you know? So I did. I hugged my dad, told him I loved him, went on my way. So when I'm going my way, I go to an Alateen meeting on Wednesday night. Now, this meeting was Wednesday night, Westlake. And the awesome part about this meeting is it was candlelight. Anybody ever go to candlelight meetings? Yeah. If you haven't been to a candlelight meeting, find one. My Wednesday night young people's meeting, we have one every third Wednesday of the month. You're more than welcome. I had this candlelight, and I'm sitting in the meeting, and we're talking about something deep. And all of a sudden, my mom comes in, and she pulls me outside, and she's crying. And I said, what's up? And she goes, Nick, your dad's dead. I said, what? Yeah, your dad's dead. He had a heart attack. He had just died 2 hours earlier. And I didn't know what to do. Talk about those character defects of rage. And just, I literally put 10 holes in those church walls that night. I was running around the place, and I didn't know how loud this was. I thought I was like 4. But when you get in that blinding rage, when you get in that disease of alcoholism, you don't know what you do sometimes. I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I remember I was running around the place going crazy, and I go outside, and I remember this big cholo dude in the meeting from a group home, all right? And he was much bigger than me, all right? And he grabbed me, and he grabbed me and hugged me, and at that moment, I was in my first step. I was powerless over my disease, and my life had become unmanageable. And at that moment, he was my second step. He was a power much greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, all right? We don't know how the steps work in our lives. We really don't. You know, until we have a loving sponsor or somebody who can guide us and tell us, this is what's going on. Because from the inside out, my thinking sucks. You know, I can't think my way out of a box. If you talk to me outside of a meeting, I don't know. I stumble over my words much more than I do now. I can't catch words. I forget things. But when I'm in a meeting of Al-Anon and I'm with Al-Anon, God's there. And I have a peace and I feel a love that I never felt anywhere else. And I had that night. And, you know, at that moment, I had nothing to do but just to go home and rest, you know, and have you love me. Because at that moment, I couldn't love anything. So as time goes on, I had to make amends to the church. They were very nice. They forgave me, which was nice. You know, I kept going to meetings. And, you know, I remember at one point I had to learn that I didn't die. My dad died. You know, it wasn't me. He didn't do it to me. It wasn't done. I wasn't a victim in this. It was what happens in life, especially when you're affected by alcoholism. My family's full of people who either smoke, you know, overeat, obsess, whatever it is, things that aren't healthy for us. It's kind of what we do. And I had to learn, you know, he died. I didn't. So I had to let go, let God. You know, I had to really understand what's here. And I had a new family. You know, I didn't cry when he died. I didn't cry when he died. Because I learned I didn't choose him. You know, I didn't choose him. I was raging out of fear, out of not knowing what to do, but he was just my dad. I loved the man, but I didn't choose him. He did the best he could with what he had. And Al-Anon took the reins from there. You know, my mom, I didn't have boundaries growing up. I did whatever I wanted. I went from complete slavery when I was being abused. You know, when I was abused, I had to do things like make their bed, make my bed, clean the bathroom, clean up their mess, make food, do the laundry. You know, and if I wanted to go somewhere with my dad, I had to ask my dad's girlfriend to do so. I didn't get to do it on my own accord. He wasn't in charge. She was. And that's the disease right there by Al-Anon's. That's our disease. It's my disease too. Because I'm dominating, nagging, scolding, and complaining all day long sometimes. And I remember when I was sitting there, when I was free, that's how I call it, I did whatever I want. I was out all night with all kinds of people doing all kinds of things. No boundaries. My mom let me do whatever I wanted. So I'd go to conventions and party all night, you know, and then one night, me and a couple of girls, we went and we jumped the fence at Agoura High and we went swimming in the pool. And they caught us, right? And the cops caught us, pulled us out of the pool. And I remember I said, okay, tell my dad. I'm not telling my mom. Telling my dad. Dad, high five, thumbs up, good job. You know, my mom, Nick, what? I got this letter in the mail. It says you were caught on the premises after dark. You know, like, yes, that was me. But I never got grounded. Okay, sorry. That's it. There was no Nick, you bad Nick, don't do that. Nick, there's punishment. Nothing. If I wanted to be grounded, I grounded myself. I actually did it once. I just didn't want to go out with my friends, so I grounded myself. You know, that's the kind of thing, like, the only direction I got was everything's okay in moderation. Now, from what I've told you, I don't think I had many good examples of moderation. You know, I had none. My dad was cheating on his girlfriend with all the women, and they all told me. Right, so I was hearing about all his exploits, and I was like, okay, time to do mine. You know, so what was I doing? I was sleeping around. You know, I was like emotionally challenged. You know, I needed you to make me feel better. I needed her to make me feel better. And all I did for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years, something like that, was look for her and then go to Al-Anon meetings. That's it. And I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't trust anybody. I was moving schools, and I remember when I was 18 years old, my high school yearbook, the quote, you know, that quote they have in the back, it said, in this life full of stress and strife, trust no one but yourself, from me. I was trusting an asshole. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't trust myself, because left to my own devices, which I was on my own devices, I was just going to Al-Anon meetings out of habit. You know, I wasn't going and I wasn't working with a sponsor and I wasn't working steps and I wasn't surrendering. I wasn't surrendering. And life was going on. My dad's ashes were taken from a mortuary by the wrong person. And I had to sue the mortuary. I didn't go burn the house down. That was recovery. That was growth. I didn't call, you know, a bunch of my homies and let's go over there and burn the place and find them and kill, whatever. No. I got a lawyer. I didn't, you know, that was the best I could do at the time. And so when I became 19, 20, 21, I'm still doing the same exploits. I was in Al-Anon, but I needed the structure. And I left Alateen at 18. I went into Al-Anon because I wanted that structure. And when I was 22, I was so lost, I put myself in an institution called the U.S. Air Force. That didn't work too well. I remember I went in there and I was stuck. When you have underlying causes and conditions, which are talked about in the Big Book, when you have like things that you don't know inside of you that are like waiting to come out, awesome character defects, go to the military, see what happens. And I remember sitting in there and I was so freaked out because all that flashbacks from those abusive times came up. You know, and I still never told my dad what happened about being abused, and I still haven't told my mom, but that's for a reason. I'll get back to that later. It's in the steps. And so I didn't tell them. You know, I went in, I went out. I got medical discharge based on a surgery, based on medical issues I had in my arm, and I went home an empty, empty man with no soul, I felt. I felt like I had no soul. I felt like I had nothing. I remember I went to a meeting that night, Friday night, my second home group in Woodland Hills. And Betty Ann, the woman who's going to be here, she walked up to me and said, "Nick, hi." She said, "Welcome back." I said, "Hi." I was shaved head, you know, straight out boot, freaked out. And she said, "You're going to Catalina, and we're going to cover you, and you're going to be of service. You're going to be of service. You're going to carry luggage. You're going to do this. You're going to do that." Okay. I had nothing else to do. I had no plans. I was supposed to be gone for 4 years. So I went to Catalina. And I went to Catalina, and I felt so much love. I remember that I got an hour of sleep the night before I went, because I was such a basket case. And I got to be of service and carry luggage, which is still what I like to do today. And I got home, and I remember there's this man in Al-Anon who freaked me out. He had this long stare. You ever met a man who was in the military and done a lot of dirt and had that long stare? That was this guy. And I remember I was sitting in Al-Anon, meaning no Al-Anon man can sponsor me. Right, I'm too freaking crazy. My problem is my own freaking behavior. It's not somebody else's drinking. And what am I going to do? I can't find an AA. I don't have the obsession over alcohol or drugs. Right? You know, I was like, Al-Anon men are, I had to fill in the blank. Yeah. And because my idea of a man was what you see in, you know, movies, gangs, fights, big dudes, you know, kicking ass, shooting people. That's what I thought of as a man. You know, you come to this meeting, these are real men in this meeting. Yeah. This meeting has real men. Give yourself a hand. Because you know what? I walked in and it's all love. And that's what it's about. So I met this man and we went hiking, me, him, and his girlfriend. He was 69 years old and could out-hike me. I remember he said to me, he said, "You know, I've been to every 12-step program with an A, you know, with an A in it, but Al-Anon is my home." I said, "Hell yeah. There, that's my sponsor." My first sponsor told me the chicken story. Find out about it later. And I remember when I asked him, I said, "Okay, you're my sponsor. Great." Now, let me tell you, at the time, people couldn't understand what I was saying. I kid you not. Me talking in front of you right now is a freaking miracle because I have pretty severe ADHD. And what that does is it makes me not able to speak to you without, I have to be really conscious when I speak. Because other than that, it's full of ums, you know what I mean, and my mind just floats, and I can't catch up to my own thinking. So he helped me with that because I didn't know I did that. I had a loving woman who said, "Nick, I can't understand half of what you say." And I thought I was the shit. I was like, "I'm great. You know, I have a great message, but nobody can understand it." And if you can't, come tell me so I know. I mean it. And so I remember I went to him and I told him that, and he said, "Okay, Nick, let's just talk about what's going on in your life." So we talked about it. We were talking about the steps. And at the end of us talking, he said, "You said, and you know what I mean, 69 times. "Really? Okay." And that's how I learned about my character defects. I learned about them by running them by other people. You know, 6 and 7. I believe that I can't see myself, so I have to really work with somebody who's at least saner than I am. All right, to help me see who I am, because I can't do it myself. That's why the steps are built on we, by the way. So the first step for me ended up being based on the 12th step. I skip a lot. The 12th step says we carry this message to others, which is what we get to do here and work some, help somebody work the steps. And it says we practice these principles in all of our affairs. Keyword all. Doesn't say not an outside issue. It doesn't say only in the rooms. You know, it doesn't say not at work. It says all of our affairs. So I had to understand that for me, the first step became I'm powerless over my first reaction to life. And when I act on that, my life becomes unmanageable. Because if she looks at me wrong, you look at me wrong, or I don't get my way, I'm freaking out. All of a sudden, I'm off doing something with somebody or myself that I don't want to tell you about. And that's when I'm on my disease. That's when I'm in my disease in Al-Anon. The 20 questions in From Survival to Recovery talk about, do you have problems with your own compulsive behavior? Do you have fear of authority figures? Do you stay in relationships out of fear of being alone? Yeah. And if you have any more, there's 20 questions. They're great. That's what helped me feel welcome in Al-Anon. So that's how my first step went. It really did. And I didn't understand the second step because I was born on dope. I was born on drugs, born under the influence. How exactly be restored to what? When you're born in the insanity, what is it? And my sponsor lovingly said to me, what God has intended for you. You're perfect. God loves you just the way you are. There's nothing wrong with you. Your heart's good. You want to be a good person. You're a human being having a spiritual experience. Yeah, spiritual being having a human experience. And at that moment, I had a big acceptance of myself. You won't find me saying I'm not perfect, by the way, because I am, including my character defects that I work on a daily basis. Because that helps me accept myself without fighting myself. Because I'm the type, I'm self-obsessed. You know, if I'm not being of service, if I'm not doing some work in Al-Anon, all I'm doing is this, spinning the wheels in my head. And that's a dangerous place to be. So the third step, you know, turn my will and my life with the care of God as I understood God. Second or third? Third, right? Thanks. And, you know, I just did that. All I do is ask other people, take action, let God be in the results. My fourth step, I've worked with my sponsor. And I told him the deepest, darkest stuff that I can't tell you from the podium. Sorry. And when I did that, it was a freedom because I did deep, dark things that I did sober. And I was like, this insane man, how am I going to share that with somebody else? And when I did, a huge, huge relief came over me. That fifth step really saved my life. Six and seven, worked on my character defects, asking people for help. Eight and nine, when I went through eight and nine, I remember when I made that list, at the top of the list was my mom. And my mom was a guilty person from the beginning. And up until this time, I did not tell her. All right, I loved her, and I didn't call her mom. Okay? So all I did was sit there and badger her for about 12 years, 13 years. You know, she wanted to be called mom. She told me she wanted to be called mom, but I wouldn't give her that respect. And all I did was blame her for what happened, even though she didn't do it. I wouldn't admit to her that she didn't abuse me. So when I did my ninth step, I went to her and I said, Mom, I love you. And every time I didn't tell you I love you, I was lying. And when I said hurtful things to you, I apologize and I won't do that again. And God willing, I haven't to this day. When also we were talking about behaviors, I said to her, and you know, since you didn't abuse, and you did not abuse me, and I know that. And I'm sorry for telling all these people that you did. That's where I left it. Because the ninth step says, you know, we make amends except when to do so would injure them or others. She was already guilty for not being there. I did not need to go, oh, and by the way, guess what happened while you were gone? You know, because that's just hurtful. Now, if she comes to hear me talk, that's on her accord. But until then, I don't need to go into that with her. Because you know what? All I need to be is a loving, kind, respectful son to my mom. That's all I need to be. And that happens today. She's still active in her, well, I'm sorry. She has her version of sobriety. And that's, you know, I found her face down in the floor with her broken arm one day after walking home in the rain. I got to take her to the hospital, be with her. I had Al-Anon men there who came to be with me, to be of service to me when I was of service to my mom. And when I took her home, I got to go home knowing that I did my job as a son. I get to be of service to people today, whether they're alcoholic or Al-Anon. I'm not saying I can get them sober. That's not what I'm talking about. Different story. Being of service in a loving, kind, and respectful way and not losing myself is a gift of the Al-Anon program. You know, when I talk to alcoholics after they're sober for a little while, we relate. one-on-one level. You know, it doesn't really matter. I'm not here to talk about how alcoholics and Al-Anons are different. Not at all. You know, my 10th step is just, for me, saying I'm wrong, changing my behavior, keep working the steps with another sponsor, with the sponsor. That's what I do on a daily basis. 11 and 12, you know, my prayer meditation, my perspective of God may be a little different than yours. We don't have to have the same one. It doesn't really matter. You know, when I talk to men of religion and faith, we are so on the same level when we talk about the principles we live by. When we live by the principles of this program, we can go toe-to-toe with anybody. You know, in a spiritual, loving way, we can all be that way. And I've seen it in all of us. It's okay if we're not the same background, but that doesn't matter because we've worked on spiritual principles based on Al-Anon, and that's what we're here for. And I love it. You know, my perspective on God is God's an action in my life. I have to be active because I'm not good with abstract thoughts or random things that I can't touch or hold. So the way I see God in my life is this. I'll close with this almost. Goodness on demand. G-O-D. That when any situation, when I'm struggling and I need God in my life, I need to see the goodness on demand in that situation. When my dad died, I got to say goodbye and tell him I love him the day before he died. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was going to happen. All right? God was there for me. The next day, I'm in an Alateen meeting, surrounded by loving Alateens who were in group homes, who were rich. It didn't really matter. We were all there because of alcoholism and the disease and recovery in the disease of alcoholism. So I got to be there, and loving God put me in an Al-Anon meeting, in an Alateen meeting. There's no other place in the world I'd rather be to hear some news like that. Nowhere else. So at that moment, I got to see goodness on demand. I got to see God in my life. You know, the way my higher power works is always there. And the 12th step I've already shared with you. You know, carry this message to others, to another Al-Anon, and practice these principles in all of our affairs. If you have an opportunity to be loving, kind, or gentle, respectful to somebody and carry the message of Al-Anon, do it. And I see you do, because when I walked in here tonight, I got smiles and I got handshakes. And it didn't really matter if you knew me or not. And I thank you. Thank you for this Al-Anon.